Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, September 26th. If you didn't understand why I've had a seemingly singular focus on Iran the last few weeks in particular, you certainly do now with the revelation by the United States, France, and Britain that for years, Iran has been building a second uranium enrichment site hidden underground from the International Atomic Energy Agency that could be operational next year. Recognizing that the gig was up, Iran, in a letter to the IAEA on Monday, confessed that there was a pilot plant, and on Friday, Presidents Barack Obama and France's Nicolas Sarkozy, along with British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, demanded that Iran allow the IAEA to conduct an immediate investigation. The existence of this facility underscores Iran's unwillingness to cooperate with the rules, said President Obama. The Iranian government must now demonstrate in deeds its peaceful intentions or be held accountable. President Sarkozy, in what was an extraordinary appearance and one for the history books, offered, "What has been revealed today is exceptional. We are now faced with a challenge made to the entire international community. If by December there is not an in-depth change in Iran's behavior, sanctions will have to be taken." Prime Minister Brown added that the level of Iran's deception will shock and anger the whole international community. Evidently, Western intelligence breached the project, a fact Iran had only recently discovered. Earlier at the UN, Iranian President Ahmadinejad would only say allegations of a nuclear weapons program were fabrications. So now we can expect events to move at light speed, especially in as much as talks between Iran and the P5 plus 1, the United States, France, Britain, Germany, Russia, and China, are slated to begin October 1st in Geneva. Unless Iran opens up its program completely to IAEA inspection and continual monitoring, harsh new sanctions are inevitable, including on the importation of gasoline, Iran's Achilles heel. Just to remind you, Iran, a major oil exporter, nonetheless has a severe shortage of gasoline due to its crumbling refinery operations that require the importing of at least 40% of its overall gasoline needs. But here's where it gets interesting. While the United States, France, Germany, and Britain will be united, what of Russia and China? We have learned in the past week that China is supplying Iran with as much as one-third of its gasoline imports, so it's hardly likely to want to support sanctions on same. Venezuela, incidentally, is also helping Iran in this regard. As for Russia, prior to Friday's announcement, President Obama told President Medvedev about the discovery of the second nuclear facility, at which point Medvedev volunteered that increased sanctions may be inevitable. Will Russia thus go along? It's unclear as of this writing, but I do have to take you back to 2 weeks ago when I was musing about Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's now not-so-secret mission to Moscow. Whereas the press focused on a probable cause, that being Netanyahu's plea that Russia not sell the advanced S-300 anti-missile system to Iran, I think that Netanyahu in effect sought Russia's tacit understanding that Israel had to strike Iran in exchange for Israel's recognition that Russia has significant commercial interests there, including future arms sales. We will quickly learn just where both Russia and China will line up, but understand this. Israel cannot afford to wait until the end of the year, as the P5 plus 1 is now targeting for Iran to move in a satisfactory fashion. I've been saying for weeks that Israel will attack in November. Of course, there are a lot of moving parts, with each one needing to be examined separately. To wit, the current leader of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. Listen to what he said in his appearance on Thursday before the UN General Assembly. Yesterday, the man who called the Holocaust a lie spoke from this podium. "To those who refused to come and to those who left in protest, I commend you. But to those who gave this Holocaust denier a hearing, I say on behalf of my people, the Jewish people and decent people everywhere, have you no shame? Have you no decency?" As described in a story by Reuters, Netanyahu then held aloft two documents, a copy of the minutes of the Wannsee conference, in which Nazi officials planned the final solution that led to the killing of 6 million Jews and the original blueprints of the Auschwitz-Birkenau death camps. He received the blueprints discovered last year during a visit to Germany in August. They contain a signature by Heinrich Himmler, Hitler's deputy himself. Are these plans of the Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp where 1 million Jews were murdered a lie too? And what of these survivors whose arms still bear the tattooed numbers branded on them by the Nazis? Are those tattoos a lie too? Netanyahu asked. Israeli leaders, not just Netanyahu, have consistently said they cannot stand idly by while Iran gets the bomb. But Netanyahu in particular was made for these times. Oh, he has a checkered past, and like all Israeli leaders, it seems, is hopelessly corrupt. One now on trial for corruption, former Prime Minister Olmert. But I was watching Netanyahu give some interviews this week, and he is without a doubt the most impressive figure on the world stage today. He's been a fascinating one for decades, going back to his days as UN ambassador, and he will seize the day. He will cement his place in the history of his nation for all times. Netanyahu can do this without launching an attack if Russia and China join the other four nations in bringing Iran to its knees, but the odds are he will be forced to act. If, on the other hand, Russia and China were to support harsher sanctions, President Obama will deserve the lion's share of the credit. And there's always that slight chance Iran's leadership will move against Ahmadinejad as a way of placating the West. We'd have Rafsanjani to thank for this, should it come to pass. But chances are this would only be part of a further stall tactic. Smaller still are the odds for complete regime change and an opening of the doors to the IAEA for all aspects of Iran's nuclear program. So, while I will wait to see how the talks progress in the first week or so, for today I am sticking with my original thesis that come mid-month, it will probably be a good time to hit the sidelines for a spell, 100% in cash. More next week as we see how Iran responds and gauge the opening tone in Geneva. President Obama hosted the G20 nations in Pittsburgh, and the White House released a statement that read, "The G20 leaders reached a historic agreement to put the G20 at the center of their efforts to work together to build a durable recovery while avoiding the financial fragilities that led to the crisis. A good move, especially as it consigns the G7 or G8 to focus on international relations and security issues. It makes sense that the G20 will now consolidate all their information on individual policies, and that this in turn will be monitored by the International Monetary Fund. On the issue of the financial system and bankers' bonuses, the G20 seeks to have bonuses linked to long-term success of financial companies and not excessive risk-taking. Bonus payments should be deferred and clawback provisions put in place, but no cap on individual bankers' bonuses. I don't have a problem with any of this either, but implementation will take months, if ever." This was a week where the economic data was less than expected and stocks reacted accordingly, closing with the worst returns in 11 weeks after hitting new yearly highs on Tuesday. Data on the housing sector was disappointing, with existing home sales for August down 2.7%, while new home sales for the month rose a less than expected 0.7%. On the all-important median home price gauge, which is how I'm judging my own predictions, the existing home price fell to $177,700, down from June and July, but still above the April low of $166,000. I said we'd bottom in this category in the April-May time period. The median price of a new home, though, fell to the lowest level since October 2003. However, in my defense, new home sales are but 8% of the total, ergo I'm still okay. That said, remember, going back to last year, I predicted that when the housing market bottomed, we'd sit there for an extended period. Obviously, nothing has changed to warrant reconsidering this position. Incidentally, my own home has officially been on the market for about 4 weeks with little activity, beyond compliments on my artwork. Well, at least Civil War history buffs like it, but I digress. Overseas, the news was light. For the Euro nations, service and manufacturing indices were above the key 50 mark for a second straight month, but a little shy of expectations. While the Asia Development Bank said China's stimulus program was hurting efforts to reform the economy from an export-led growth engine to one of private consumption, a fact echoed by the G20 and which China readily admits. But the ADB also hiked its forecast for China's GDP growth in 2010 to 8.9%. Also, a separate survey in China has consumers saying they will spend more the next 12 months. Elsewhere in Asia, Japan's exports fell in August for an 11th straight month, though only off 0.7% from July's pace. Nonetheless, it calls into question the strength of this nation's recovery. Back in the States, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee met and, in holding the line on rates, said the economy was picking up, as was housing, but consumers were still victim to the sour labor market. Importantly, the Fed also said it would continue to support housing by gradually slowing its purchase of mortgage-backed securities, as opposed to slamming the door on this key emergency program, which means that any rise in mortgage rates will not be as sharp as it otherwise might be. The Fed also continued to say inflation will remain subdued. Lastly, at Tuesday's close, the S&P 500 was up 18.6% for the year and NASDAQ up 36% before turning negative the next 3 days. But at least for a moment, we were almost exactly where I said we'd finish the year. The S&P up 20% and NASDAQ up 30%. I mention this because, as stated in the opening and for the past few weeks, unless events change dramatically, I will be going to the sidelines shortly. At the same time, though, a lot of us were shocked to pick up the Wall Street Journal last weekend and see a bullish column by James Grant, editor of Grant's Interest Rate Observer and a perma-bear, which has actually held him in good stead when looking at the past 10-plus years in total, who suddenly appeared with some highly bullish remarks. Mr. Grant, as if they really knew, leading economists predict that recovery from our Great Recession will be plodding, gray, and jobless, but they don't know and can't. The future is unfathomable. Not famously a glass half full kind of fellow, I am about to propose that the recovery will be a bit of a barn burner. Not that I can really know, either, the future being what it is. However, though I can't predict, I can guess. No, not guess, let us say infer. Mr. Grant continues, Americans are blessedly out of practice at bearing up under economic adversity. Individuals take their knocks, always, as do companies and communities. But it has been a generation since a business cycle downturn exacted the collective pain that this one has done. Knocked for a loop, we forget a truism. With regard to the recession that precedes the recovery, worse is subsequently better. The deeper the slump, the zippier the recovery. Turning to the street, stocks fell, thanks to the weaker-than-expected economic news, including a poor durable goods number for August, down when up was expected, as well as some not-so-great earnings reports. For example, Research in Motion, maker of the BlackBerry phone, offered up a tepid sales forecast for the quarter ending November 28, as it is hit by heightened competition from the likes of Apple's iPhone, Palm Inc.'s Pre, and others, and RIM shares plummeted 16%. On the week, the Dow Jones declined 1.6% to 96.65, the S&P lost 2.2%, and NASDAQ fell 2.0%. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a great one.